Chapter 50 On the Olive Mount. Winter, a bad guest, sits with me at home. Blue are my hands with his friendly handshaking. I honor him, that bad guest, but gladly leave him alone. Gladly do I run away from him, and when one runs well, then one escapes him. With warm feet and warm thoughts do I run where the wind is calm, to the sunny corner of mine olive mount. There do I laugh at my stern guest, and am still fond of him, because he clears my house of flies and quiets many little noises, for he suffers it not if a gnat wants to buzz, or even two of them. Also the lane makes he lonesome, so that the moonlight is afraid there at night. A hard guest is he, but I honor him, and do not worship, like the tenderlings, the pot-bellied fire idol. Better even a little teeth chattering than idle adoration, so wills my nature. And especially have I a grudge against all ardent, steaming, steamy fire idols. Him who I love better in winter than in summer. Better do I now mock at mine enemies, and more heartily, when winter sits in my house. Heartily, verily, even when I creep into bed, there still laughs and wantons my hidden happiness, even my deceptive dream laughs. I, a creeper, never in my life did I creep before the powerful, and if ever I lied, then did I lie out of love. Therefore am I glad even in my winter bed. A poor bed warms me more than a rich one, for I am jealous of my poverty, and in winter she is most faithful to me. With a wickedness do I begin every day. I mock at the winter with a cold bath. On that account grumbles my stern housemate. Also do I like to tickle him with a wax taper, that he may finally let the heavens emerge from ashy gray twilight. For especially wicked am I in the morning, at the early hour when the pail rattles at the well, and horses neigh warmly in gray lanes. Impatiently do I then wait, that the clear sky may finally dawn for me, the snow-bearded winter sky, the hoary one, the whitehead, the winter sky, the silent winter sky, which often stifles even its sun. Did I perhaps learn from it the long clear silence, or did it learn it from me, or has each of us devised it himself? Of all good things, the origin is a thousandfold. All good roguish things spring into existence for joy. How could they always do so for once only? A good roguish thing is also the long silence, and to look like the winter sky out of a clear round-eye countenance, like it to stifles one's sun and one's inflexible solar will. Verily, this art and this winter roguishness have I learned well. My best love wickedness and art is it, that my silence has learned not to betray itself by silence. Clattering with diction and dice, I outwit the solemn assistance. All those stern watchers shall my will and purpose elude, that no one might see down into my depth and into mine ultimate will. For that purpose did I devise the long, clear silence. Many a shrewd one did I find. He veiled his countenance and made his water muddy, that no one might see therethrough and thereunder. But precisely to him came the shrewder distrusters and nutcrackers. Precisely from him did they fish his best concealed fish. But the clear, the honest, the transparent, these are for me the wisest silent ones. In them so profound is the depth that even the clearest water does not betray it. You snow-bearded silent winter sky, you round-eyed white head above me, O you heavenly simile of my soul and its wantonness! And must I not conceal myself like one who has swallowed gold, lest my soul should be ripped up? Must I not wear stilts, that they may overlook my long legs, all those enviers and injurers around me? Those dingy, fire-warmed, used-up, green-tinted, ill-natured souls, how could their envy endure my happiness? Thus do I show them only the ice and winter of my peaks, and not that my mountain winds all the solar girdles around it. They hear only the whistling of my winter storms, and know not that I also travel over warm seas, like longing, heavy, hot south winds. They commiserate also my accidents and chances, but my words say, suffer the chance to come to me, innocent is it as a little child? How could they endure my happiness if I did not put around it accidents and winter privations and bearskin caps and enmantling snowflakes? If I did not myself commiserate their pity, the pity of those enviers and injurers? If I did not myself sigh before them and chatter with cold and patiently let myself be swathed in their pity? This is the wise, waggish will and goodwill of my soul, that it conceals not its winters and glacial storms. It conceals not its childblains either. To one man, lonesomeness is the flight of the sick one. To another, it is the flight from the sick ones. Let them hear me chattering and sighing with winter cold, all those poor, squinting knaves around me. With such sighing and chattering do I flee from their heated rooms. Let them sympathize with me and sigh with me on account of my childblains. At the ice of knowledge will he yet freeze to death, so they mourn. Meanwhile, do I run with warm feet here, and here on mine olive mount, in the sunny corner of mine olive mount do I sing and mock at all pity. Thus sang Zarathustra. Chapter 51. On Passing By. Thus slowly wandering through many peoples in divers cities, did Zarathustra return by roundabout roads to his mountains and his cave. And behold, thereby came he unawares also to the gate of the great city. Here, however, a foaming fool, with extended hands, sprang forward to him and stood in his way. It was the same fool whom the people called the Ape of Zarathustra, for he had learned from him something of the expression and modulation of language, and perhaps liked also to borrow from the store of his wisdom. And the fool talked thus to Zarathustra: "O Zarathustra, here is the great city. Here you have nothing to seek and everything to lose. Why would you wade through this mire? Have pity upon your foot. Spit rather on the gate of the city and turn back. Here is the hell for anchorites' thoughts. Here are great thoughts seethed alive and boil small. Here do all great sentiments decay. Here may only rattle-bone sensations rattle. Smell you not already the shambles and cookshops of the spirit? Steam not this city with the fumes of slaughtered spirit? See you not the souls hanging like limp, dirty rags? And they make newspapers also out of these rags. Hear you not how spirit has here become a verbal game? Loathsome verbal swill does it vomit forth, and they make newspapers also out of this verbal swill. They hound one another and know not whither. They inflame one another and know not why. They tinkle with their pinch-peck, they jingle with their gold. They are cold and seek warmth from distilled waters. They are inflamed and seek coolness from frozen spirits. They are all sick and sore through public opinion. All lusts and vices are here at home, but here there are also the virtuous. There is much appointed virtue. Much appointable virtue with scribe fingers and hearty sitting flesh and waiting flesh, blessed with small breast stars and padded haunchless daughters. There is here also much piety and much faithful spittle-licking and spittle-backing before the God of hosts. From on high drips the star and the gracious spittle, for the high longs every starless bosom. The moon has its court, and the court has its moon calves. To all, however, that comes from the court do the mendicant people pray, and all appointable mendicant virtues. I serve, you serve, we serve. So prays all appointable virtue to the prince, that the merited star may at last stick on the slender breast. But the moon still revolves around all that is earthly. So revolves also the prince around what is earthliest of all. That, however, is the gold of the shopman. The god of the hosts of war is not the god of the golden bar. The prince's proposes, but the shopman disposes. By all that is luminous and strong and good in you, O Zarathustra, spit on this city of shopmen and return back. Here flows all blood putridly and tepidly and frothily through all veins. spit on the great city, which is the great slum where all the scums froth together. Spit on the city of compressed souls and slender breasts, of pointed eyes and sticky fingers. On the city of the obtrusive, the brazen-faced, the pen demagogues and tongue demagogues, the overheated ambitious, where everything maimed, ill-famed, lustful, untrustful, over-mellow, sickly yellow, and sidious festers pernicious. Spit on the great city and turn back. Here, however, did Zarathustra interrupt the foaming fool and shut his mouth. "Stop this at once," called Zarathustra. "Long have your speech and your species disgusted me. Why did you live so long by the swamp that you yourself had to become a frog and a toad? Flows there not a tainted, frothy, swamp blood in your own veins, where you have thus learned to croak and revile? Why did you not go into the forest? Or why did you not till the ground? Is a sea not full of green islands? I despise your contempt. And when you warned me, why did you not warn yourself? Out of love alone shall my contempt and my warning bird take wing, but not out of the swamp. They call you mine ape, you foaming fool, but I call you my grunting pig. By your grunting, you spoil even my praise of folly. What was it that first made you grunt? Because no one sufficiently flattered you. Therefore did you seat yourself beside this filth, that you might have cause for grunting, that you might have cause for much vengeance. For vengeance, you vain fool, is all your foaming. I have divined you well. But your fool's word injures me, even when you are right. And even if Zarathustra's word were 100 times justified, you would ever do wrong with my word. Thus spoke Zarathustra. Then did he look on the great city inside, and was long silent. At last he spoke thus: I loathe also this great city, and not only this fool. Here and there is nothing to better, nothing to worsen. Woe to this great city, and I would that I already saw the pillar of fire in which it will be consumed. For such pillars of fire must precede the great noontide. But this has its time and its own fate. The precept, however, give I to you in parting, you fool. Where one can no longer love, there should one pass by. Thus spoke Zarathustra, and passed by the fool and the great city.